So I want to look at pondering some of the characteristics and manifestations that come about when we walk under the law, and just a couple of them, and just how some of these fruits that manifest, they are and contrary to exactly to walking in love and walking by the Spirit. And I came to some verses in Galatians, but before that I want to read in Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 13, about love, just some specific things. And then we'll go to Galatians and read that. So we'll just read from verse 4. Here the characteristics of love. Love is patient. Love is kind, is not jealous. Love does not brag or boast, and it is not arrogant or proud. And it does not act unbecomingly, and it does not seek its own. It is not provoked, it does not take into account a wrong suffered. So love. So now let's go to Galatians in chapter 5. And we see when Paul speaks about some of these fruits among the Galatians and also even the Corinthians, we see that they lacked love. And in that lack of love, there was these very contrary fruits manifesting. And I'm saying this because, you know, from time to time, we see these things. We're wrestling with these same things, right? We battled with them, and we've been confronting some of these things. And when you see them manifest, you know, it all comes back in the end to what it looks like to walk in love, right? And when we read there in love, it says it does not seek its own. And that's that selfish flesh nature, right? When we walk according to the flesh, and our flesh desires something, it will always manifest in these fruits of selfish ambition, and that pride, and that envy, and that jealousy, and even biting and devouring. And this is what happened to the Galatians. They started to bite and devour, and then it leads to bitterness and all these things. And I was pondering this because we've seen how these bitter roots develop and some of these things that manifest. And it's like, where does this stuff come from, right? How does these strongholds come? Because they're very strong when a bitter root comes in, or unforgiveness, right? Like, people get so torn down. Like, we were talking about this the other day. Like, these people that are slave of drug addictions, you know, it doesn't just start with a drug addiction necessarily. You know, we were learning that a lot of times it starts with something like a rejection, or, you know, someone hurt somebody and they were bitter, right? They felt rejected by somebody. They didn't feel the love. And so what happens? They got upset, they got angry, right? And then so the emotion is there, and what do? You drown it away with alcohol, or, you know, you light up a cigarette, or you go to the drugs, and eventually, right, it gets worse and worse and worse, right? And you go to the flesh. And so under the law, we see these Galatians, right? What was happening? They had these impure motives because they're under the law, and it was about circumcision. And so there was boasting, and then in the boasting, there was that pride, and then there was biting and devouring to try and get ahead of someone, right? And so then he says, be warned, right? Watch out for the works of the flesh, because these things are going to follow. And you're going to see these things come when you start to have these roots, these things that get sown in your life. And so I was meditating on this, how these things start. And Paul is just exhorting how the law is fulfilled in them, or it's loving your neighbors itself. But if we cling to the law, I mean, we don't really deal with the flesh, then all these things are going to come and manifest. And even amongst the brethren, specifically, we see these areas that Paul often talks about with the Corinthians. He talks about strife and jealousy. In the Galatians, very similar things, right? Envying or bitterness or different things that would come up, right? And so I was thinking about these things and just thought it would be good for us to read about it. And specifically, after he lists some of these works of the flesh, the fruits of the Spirit, in verse 25 of chapter 5, then he says, now if we live by the Spirit, let us walk in the Spirit. So what he's saying is what Jesus said, right? A good tree can't produce bad fruit. If you guys are saying you're born again, and you're calling yourselves sons of God, then you got to walk in the Spirit, right? You got to walk by the Spirit. You can't walk according to the flesh. You're setting your minds in the flesh, and you're looking to yourselves. Right? Love does not keep record of wrongs, right? Someone does something and you hold that, you're keeping record wrong. It's selfishness. It's looking to yourself, right? It doesn't seek its own. You're not worried about yourself. You want your brother to do good. You want your brother to do better than you, right? So that there's never that challenging and that jealousy and all these types of things. It doesn't brag. Right? It doesn't have that boasting in it. All these types of things. So he's saying, walk in the Spirit. Remember, consider one another as better than yourselves. And then he says in verse 26, let us not become boastful. Right? There it is again, this boasting keeps on reoccurring. And I find there it is in this passage that Paul's talking in the Galatians about the law. Right? And this law just manifests these things. Here it is, they're manifesting. And here it is, boasting and then challenging one another, envying one another. And I just never really noticed this, how it says challenging one another. And you know, that challenging or that competitive, you know, a competitiveness can come out of this, right? A competitiveness, a challenging, and an envying. So he brings this out to these so-called brothers that were coming back under the law again. Back under the law. So they're forgetting what it was all about when we first got saved, when they first came to the Lord, right? You know, he says now that you are sons of God through faith in Christ Jesus. They had come to faith. Literally, they had come to faith. They were going back. So they had forgot the mercy and the grace of God. They had forgot that it was the Spirit that was sanctifying them. And then when they had first come to the Lord and cast that yoke on the Lord and taken His yoke, and now they're trying to be perhaps perfected according to the flesh. That's what Paul is saying, right? Starting in the Spirit, perfecting in the flesh, and some of these things are coming up. You know, this boasting, they're challenging, and all this guile's coming up. And Paul's trying to expose it, right? And look what he says later on. He says, may it never be that I should boast, in 6:14, except in the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ, through which the world has been crucified to me and I to the world. You see, they forgot about the cross, obviously, because they're more concerned about the boasting. And it seems as though, just like the Corinthians, they were looking to get their praise, perhaps, from man. I think this is a common one, right? Or want to be esteemed by someone, or approved by someone, or exalted, or whatnot, right? And this is the problem with even the Jews in Jesus' day. They were afraid of being cast out of the synagogues because they loved the approval of men rather than God. And so because of they were coming under the circumcision group, right, to be approved, they wanted to be esteemed. And so they forgot about the cross. They weren't seeking the praises of God. See, that's a wrong motive, right? Because it has a motive for self, to be pleasing in someone else's eyes rather than God's eyes. And then these fleshly things manifest, and the boasting and the challenging and all this stuff. So I read this, and as I was thinking about this, I was thinking of, was there an example in the Old Testament or a story that we can look at that can see the end of this? Wow, when these things manifest, to warn us of the danger when we see some of these things coming in our hearts, right? From time to time, we may not always express them outwardly with our words or actions, but sometimes you can tell when they're in your heart, right? When there's a jealousy or an envy or a competitiveness or something, right? Or when you see a brother doing well and part of you, you know, like it doesn't like it, right? But we should be praising, you know, or encouraging one another when we're doing well. Right? That should be the heart's desire. And so you can tell, right? We have these things in our heart. And so I thought of an example here in the Old Covenant in 2 Samuel chapter 2. So I thought we could read this story. And we see an example here actually of the competitiveness, specifically on that word, let us not challenge one another. And I have this title right here, and it says Civil War, right? Civil War, I thought that's interesting. What is a civil war, right, in the church? It's brothers fighting against brothers, right? It's biting and devouring. But they weren't biting and devouring, they were using swords here, right? These brothers were using swords. Civil war in Israel. And here it is, an example, right? And it was even back then. And this is what happens when we're not in walking in love, when we're actually under the law. See, this is under the old covenant, but that wasn't how they were supposed to walk. They were supposed to walk in love, right? So what this civil war is actually between the two houses, the house of Judah and the house of Israel. And David, of course, was ruling over the Judah. At this point, just in the beginning of the chapter, Saul had died, David had become king, and Judah was following after David. But Israel had not yet followed David. Israel was following under Saul's son, Ishbosheth. So there was a bit of a separation, right? The two kingdoms. And we see this continually through the Old Covenant. There was these two kingdoms, and they were there, right? But it was God's desire to bring them together, and they did come later on. Israel came to make covenant, and they said, we are bone of your bone, David, and flesh of your flesh, right? And so God brought them together. He brought them one. And that's His desire in the body, is to bring us together in one. But there was still two houses in God's so-called house there in the land. And so before they came together, it was one, something happened, something broke out, there was a division among them, and it ended bitter. And that's what we want to come to. Well, let's read it in verse 12, 2 Samuel 2. Now Abner, the son of Ner, went out from Mahanaim to Gibeon with the servants of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul. And Abner was the commander of the army under of Israel. And Joab was the commander of the army of Judah. So here are the leading men. These would be like the overseers of the, you know, these two houses, right? They were the head brothers, these guys leading under the kings there. So Joab and Abner. And then verse 13, Joab the son of Zeruiah and the servants of David went out, and they met them by the pool of Gibeon, and they sat down, one on the one side of the pool and the other on the other side of the pool. Right? And there must have been something going on in the heart, because look what happened. Abner said to Joab, and Abner started this one here, now let the young men arise and hold a contest before us. And Joab said, let them arise. See, there was some competitiveness there. There was a challenge. Just like Paul was warning the Galatians, you know, let's not challenge one another. Here we see a manifestation of what happens when we're under the law here. This fruit manifests. There's a challenge from Abner to Joab. Let's see which one of us. And why was he challenging? Who's better, right? Who's stronger? You know, you guys are following the house of David. We're following the house of Saul's son. Well, let's have a challenge. So he makes a challenge. And he takes him up, right? But Joab should have known better. He should never have given into that. He should never have let the pride give in. Well, because the pride says, "Oh, my brother's challenging me. I can't let him down. I experience these things. You know, I've shared some examples in the past how these brothers they make threats, right? And so the pride, because of the pride, you know, I'm trying to encourage this one brother not to threaten. He's overcome the physical abuse, but he's struggling with the threatening. Right? But why do we threaten back? Right? Because of the pride. We can't humble ourselves and just turn the other cheek. Right? When Jesus was reviled, he did not revile back." Because there was no pride in him, right? But it's when we're proud and we have this competitiveness, we take those challenges. And Joab was, obviously, there was a measure of pride. He took it up. He took it up and he shouldn't have done it. But it says they arose, they went over by count, 12 for Benjamin and Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, and 12 for the servants of David. Interesting that there's 12 young men there. And each one of them seized his opponent by the head and thrust his sword in his opponent's side. So they fell down together. Therefore, that place is called Halkath Karzurim, which means field of sword edges, which is in Gibeon. And they destroyed them. And that day, it says, the battle was severe, and Abner and the men of Israel were beaten before the servants of David. What is that, something to rejoice in? You know, we overcame them, right? Are they our enemies? They're supposed to be our brothers. They struck them down. And look what happened. Now the three sons of Zeruiah were there, Joab, and Abishai, and Asael. And Asael was swift-footed as one of the gazelles which is in the field. And Asael pursued Abner, and he did not turn to the right or to the left from following them. And here, you know, Asael, along with Joab, under the house of David, they just, you know, struck down these 12 men, and now he's still pursuing Abner. You know, he's still in his zeal. He's got a zeal here, but this is not the zeal of God. This is a zeal which is selfishly ambitious. And he's going after him in his pride. And he's going to pursue this man. But it's totally in his flesh. And he's gonna suffer the consequences of this. And Abner, of course, who had been a superior and more mature in his kingdom, obviously exalted to be commander. And Asael, not yet at the place of where his brother Joab was a little younger, but had the zeal and he was going after him. You know, and it said, and Abner said, as he was being chased by him, he looked behind him and he said, "Is that you, Asahel?" And he answered it. He says, "It is I." See, he knew him, right? He knew this guy. I can't believe what happens here. Like, these guys knew each other and they were zealous to the point of bloodshed. And so Abner said to him, "Turn to your right or to your left and take hold of one of the young men for yourself and take for yourself his spoil." You know, they're running. He's chasing him and he's like, "Get away from him. Turn to the left." And this Abner, I'm sure he knew he's going to strike him down, right? But Asael was not willing to turn aside from following him. He should have received the warning. And Abner repeated again to Asael, "Turn aside from following me. Why should I strike you to the ground? How then could I lift up my face to your brother Joab?" However, he refused to turn aside. Therefore, Abner struck him in the belly with the butt end of the spear, so that the spear came out of his back. And he fell there and died on the spot. And it came about that all who came to the place where Asael had fallen and died stood still. But Joab and Abishai pursued Abner. You see, now it just got worse. His brothers, their brother had died, and they began to pursue Abner. And when the sun was going down, they came to the hill Emmaah, which is in the front of Gai, by the way of the wilderness of Gibeon. The sons of Benjamin gathered now behind Abner, and they became one band, and they stood on the top of the certain hill. Now Abner finally called out to Joab and said, "Shall the sword devour forever?" And he said to him, "Do you not know that it will end bitter? It will be bitter in the end. How long will you refrain from telling the people to turn back from following their brothers?" And Joab said, "As God lives, if you had not spoken, surely then the people would have gone away in the morning, each from following his brother." And when I got to the end of that, I realized that's where the bitterness starts right there. You know? How long shall the sword divide? And Jesus, when he said, we know what the sword means, because Jesus said, you know, "I didn't come to bring peace, but a sword." And then in the other gospel, it says, "I didn't come to bring peace, but division," right? So that sword symbolizes division. That's what it symbolizes, division. And it started with a challenge. It started with the boastful challenging one another, just like Paul warned the Galatians. And I know how Paul saw the end. He saw the warning in that, and that's why he warned the Galatians of these things when you have these things in your heart. Because the end of it will be bitter. And when the challenge came up, it ended in bloodshed, and it ended in bitterness. And that could have been the beginning of some, you know, of wars. That's really how wars start, even naturally speaking. Little things. People get bitter, and a war breaks out. And bitterness began because of the sword, because someone did not control their tongue. Right? The Proverbs and the Psalms, there's many of them that talk about how the tongue is like a sharp sword. Right? And sometimes we don't hold our tongue, and we let it loose. And even James says, you know, how can fresh water and bitter water come from the same spring, right? Out of the mouth. This comes out of the mouth. And when the tongue speaks, it can do damage, and it can lead to bitterness. And you know, we probably all had different experiences with that. And we know that that bitter root, it can defile, and it does serious damage. And so it's best to cut that source off, to cut it off where it comes from, right? And here we see an example how there was that pride, there was that self, there was that motivation, that selfish ambition, and it ended in bitterness. So let's go back to Galatians and look at that. So we read from Galatians 5:26, "Let us not become boastful, challenging one another and envying one another." And then Paul goes on in chapter 6, verse 1, and he says, "Brethren, even if a man is caught in a trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself, lest you too be tempted." So why does he write that right after? He's talking about a man's caught in trespass. A man's caught in trespass, and he says, "You who are spiritual, restore in a spirit of gentleness." Right, well, prior to this, he's talking about brothers becoming boastful and challenging and all this. And I thought, how does this fit together, right? With this brother who's in a trespass and these brothers who are boasting and challenging. And then I had read earlier in 1 Corinthians 5, because I was reading about how they were doing discipline amongst this brother who was in immorality. We talked about that earlier. And it says how they were becoming arrogant among one another and not rather mourning. Right? And it says, in fact, they were becoming proud, they were becoming boastful. And I was like, how is this? If they were becoming boastful and proud, and Paul's desires with that, they would have mourned and rather dealt with the sin and put the man out. But what they were doing is they were becoming boastful. They were putting up with the sin. But probably what was happening from what I'm gathering is that they were looking down on this brother and thinking, oh, you know. And you see what happens is the flesh feels good when other people do bad. It can be the same in the church, right? If we don't really have love in our heart, when our brother's doing bad, you know, or a sister, we shouldn't be feeling good about ourselves because we're doing better. Right? See, that would be an evil motive. But rather, we should mourn and we should weep. And in the spirit of gentleness, come in the person of love to see them uplifted. But it seems as though in Corinthians, what was happening, what Paul is spotting, was that they weren't mourning, in fact, even when a brother was in sin. But he says they were becoming arrogant, right? And I was thinking, how can this happen? And boastful. Well, possibly because they looked down on someone. Right? They didn't really have love. They saw someone in sin and just judging them, but not really, you know, mourning and saying, you know, "We love you, but we can't have you in the fellowship like this." Right? And weeping about it. And I was convicted about that, thinking, "Lord, I want to have that heart, because I know how easy it is when you see sin. It's like you get that zeal, right? You get that anger against it. But then, do I really, really love the person? Right? Do I really want to see them repent? Right? Or I'm just, do I feel better about myself because, you know, maybe some areas in my life, you know, which are so small, and now this big sin is manifest, you know, makes me feel like I'm righteous, and I can be puffed up in that, right? I could really be puffed up and thinking that I'm doing better. But that's not God's will. In fact, His will is that we could come to a person in that spirit of gentleness, not becoming boastful, challenging, not envying, and not thinking we're better than others, but humbly coming to someone to see them restored. And Paul says that we need to bear one another's burdens. And that's what love is, right? Love is bearing each other's burdens, and that's fulfilling the law. And so he says, if anyone thinks he is something, you see, there it is, right? We think we're something because we can look on and measure ourselves by someone else. And that's all it is, seeking the praises of men, right? If we have the attitude, we're looking for the praises of men, we can measure ourselves among the brother who's sinning, right? And then we can think that we're something. And what happens then is we actually deceive ourselves. When we look at that brother that way, we deceive ourselves and we're set up for a fall, right? That's why he says, lest you too be tempted. And so when we see our brothers in sin or sisters in sin, we can't have that attitude because surely the fall will come. And I was reading this, it was a warning for me, and just check my heart, right? What kind of love do I have, right? Love bears all things. It believes all things. It hopes all things. If a brother is in trespass, it's going to bear all things. It's going to bear the burdens, right? It's going to bear. It's going to believe. It's going to hope. It's going to be in prayer. It's going to be interceding from the brother and the sister. It's going to be seeking their good. Not an ability to gossip about them or talk about that person, you know, amongst other people. But really my motive is just to, you know, it's not really pure. And so we need to sow good seed, right? Not according to the flesh, because Paul is telling the Galatians, don't sow in the flesh, right? Sow in the spirit, and you'll reap in the spirit. If you sow in the flesh, it's going to come back on you. It's going to come back to you. So an example, again, here, that Paul warns us of. So let's look in James chapter 3 about this, because these fruits here, specifically envy, some say jealousy in some places, and strife, are very common, I found. Very common among the believers. These things seem to manifest. In Romans 13, when it talks about the works of the flesh, it names jealousy and strife. It's jealousy and strife. So divisions and jealousy, they seem to always go together, right? There might be jealousy that brings strife. So it ends in bitterness, right? These things manifest. okay, James. James chapter 3. So here James 3 is talking about the tongue, right? In verse 5 it says, the tongue is a small part of the body, yet it boasts of great things. Okay, there's the boasting. You see how it starts? It starts with boasting. And then verse 8, it's a deadly poison. Verse 9 says, with it we bless our Lord, with it we curse men. Now it begins to curse men. It starts with boasting. There might have been some envy or jealousy or something. It begins to bring accusation or revilement towards men. Right, blessing and cursing, and now we see in verse 11, bitter waters are coming forth, right? Which defile. And so verse 13, now this is the context of verse 13. Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior, his deeds, and the gentleness of wisdom. Now notice those words, how you show your good deeds. It's in the gentleness of wisdom. When we read in Galatians 6, it says, when you see your brother in trespass, go to him in a spirit of gentleness, right? See, that's true wisdom. That is true wisdom, is going to him in that spirit of gentleness. That's the gentleness of wisdom. Seeing his restoration, right? But, you see, verse 14, now this is the other brother. The brother who really isn't so concerned, right, about the sin. And we have to look at our motives, right? He's just concerned about that sin and, you know, making himself look good in comparison. This is a bitter jealousy, right? If you have bitter jealousy, now that word, bitter jealousy, some say bitter envy, I looked up that word jealousy. It's also can be translated zeal. Right? Make sure you understand it. So a bitter zeal. So that word is used in Romans 10, I believe it's verse 2, where it says they have a zeal not according to knowledge. I looked it up. It's the exact same Greek word. They have a zeal not according to knowledge. See, so this bitter zeal, bitter jealousy, right, this ambition is not God's zeal. It's a demonic zeal, as we find out later. This is a demonic zeal. It's a zeal, but it's for selfish motives, right? You see? But it can have an appearance. See, it's not just called this wisdom, because it must have an appearance to some as though, you know, it seems like it's doing the right thing, right? But it is also, it speaks of selfish ambition or strife. Okay, that word is strife, and selfish ambition, which is strife. And that word also means to put oneself ahead of someone else, to seek to put yourself ahead of someone else. And I thought, boy, no, this is really starting to hit home here, right? Because if my desire is to become great among, you know, others, right? Like, you know, James and John struggle with this, right? You know, they wanted to be the great among them. There's many tests, right? For example, those guys who wanted to cast down the fire and stuff, right? That zeal, but it was a bitter zeal against those Samaritans, you know, or whoever they were that wasn't receiving Jesus. It wasn't God's wisdom. That was a demonic wisdom. So they had that bitter zeal, right? And their selfish ambition, which brought... Jesus saw that fruit, right? That strife. That was to seek to exalt themselves ahead of others, right? Who didn't maybe have knowledge, or the same knowledge. They had the knowledge. And I was reading about this too the other day, how knowledge puffs up, right? Knowledge puffs up. And so sometimes what happens is when we can see things that other people can't see, right? It's easy to make judgments. And that comes with knowledge. See, that's part of the test. So as we're reading the Word, we're getting more knowledge. The danger is that as we get knowledge, it's not for to look at others, right? The knowledge is for us to look at ourselves and my heart. Right? But I found in my walk, if I look back, when I got the knowledge, it was so easy to look at others and to use the knowledge to others who didn't understand or know, have that zeal and use it in a wrong way to put people down. And so what did I brought myself under? I brought myself under the law because I was looking for to boast, right? And I was looking for my... you know, to be exalted or to look good, and it was not for out of love. And that gonna bring strife, right? Because that's gonna manifest in the body, not just gonna manifest outside, it's gonna happen in the circle, and that strife is gonna bring about bitterness, because it always ends. When the sword comes, it's gonna be a bitter end. Right? And that bitterness is lethal. And so he's warning here again with the tongue, right? It's just starting with the tongue, because it's coming right in the same line here. If you have this stuff, it's, what did you say? It's in your heart. And that's always where it starts, it's in the heart. But it will come out. Do not be arrogant. There's the arrogance. And so lie against the truth. Right? Because that wisdom is deception. Right? It's lying against the truth. It's not true wisdom. We have to humble ourselves under the truth. And say, you know what? This zeal that I have, this is not God's zeal. Right? This ambition in my heart, it's not. Not from the Lord. It's self-seeking. Love does not seek its own. And I have to say, Lord, in my decision here, whenever we make decisions, right, is this wisdom? Am I seeking my gain in it? Or am I seeking the Lord's glory for this, right? What is the Lord glorified by? This wisdom, he says, is not that which comes down from above, but is earthly, natural, and demonic. It's really demonic wisdom. It's scary to think that if we've had zeal, that's not by the Spirit, right? A bitter zeal. He says, for where jealousy, and there it is, jealousy and selfish ambition. Or some say jealousy and strife. Those exact two that the Corinthians are struggling. You know when the Corinthians are struggling with those things? 1 Corinthians 3, right? Some say, you know, Paul, he's the man. Apollos, he's the guy. Or Cephas, right? What were they looking for? They were looking for esteeming men, esteeming themselves, that they were followers of, oh, the house of Judah, right? I follow Joab, you know. Oh, I'm with Abner, right? Well, let's have a contest, right? Let's have a debate. And that's what happens. We have a debate. In fact, that word strife also, as I looked it up, or that word zeal, had to do with when they have these elections, right? When they have elections, that was one of the descriptions. And what do you do when you have election? Well, you have one guy, right? Let's vote for him. And so there's a debate. There's a contest. Right? And we what do we do? We try and exalt. Vote for this guy. He's the man, right? Vote for this guy. That's what that word implies. And I thought that's a great example, right? But that's not how the kingdom works. The kingdom's not about that, because there's only one person that gets exalted, and that's Jesus. And everyone else is humbling themselves to the cross, just as Jesus did. And Jesus exalts the humble. And so, again, right, the Corinthians are struggling with this jealousy and selfish ambition. And so it's something to guard against. It says, where these things are, it says there's disorder in every evil thing. And we know the Corinthians are struggling with that. There is disorder in the church. There is confusion, right? The Spirit was supposed to be moving in there, and they were speaking in tongues and doing all kinds of things, and they weren't having order, right? The Spirit, you know, we see this. People wanting the Lord, but there's so much ambition there, right? All these movements of the Spirit. Everybody wants to, you know, be great for God, but it's all selfish ambition. And what's going to happen from that? It's going to be the total disorder and every evil thing. How can good come out of people who are seeking for, you know, an impartation or a gifting or to be, you know, I want to be used by God or I want to be a prophet for God, right? And this is what the gospel is, their gospel that they're spreading. This is all to do with selfish ambition, right? Being exalted, something to boast about. It's going to produce disorder and confusion. Total disorder. And this is the fruit. This is also the fruit. When we see there's confusion, we need to back up and say, where did this come from, mate? Why is there disorder here? And this is what we're seeing, as I've been sharing some of these other churches, right? we're seeing disorder and just confusion come out. And so the Lord's got to deal with the heart and say, look, we got to walk in love here. We got to walk in the Spirit. We got to deal with the house. We got to mourn for those who are sinning. We got to have love for one another. We got to examine our hearts and see that we're not trying to exalt ourselves among men, right? Everybody's trying to get their say. Everybody wants to share. Everybody wants to speak. No, there has to be an order. God's given order. Certain heads, there's got to be submission there. And as the Lord exalts, right, He's gonna do the work. He's going to glorify His name. But look about the wisdom from above. It's first pure. So of course, right, it's pure. And Paul gives us an example in 1 Corinthians 5. He's saying, you should have mourned over this brother, but wisdom is pure. And so, you know what? You got to put him out, right? You know, we want to see him repent. And the fact is that perhaps, according to 2 Corinthians, may have been the brother that repented, and Paul said whom he had forgiven, brought back, we don't know for certain. But it sounds like that could have produced a repentance in his life, right? Praise God for that. So wisdom has to be pure. It has to deal with sin. But it also is peaceable, right? And this is really important. And this peaceable fruit is a comment. We see this repeated here. We see it also in Hebrews 12 when it talks about pursuing peace with all men. And then it talks about the bitter root coming. This peaceableness, in as we have wisdom, as we have, as we're counseling together, as we're dealing with issues, right, among brethren specifically, seeking peace is so important. It's the second most important thing regarding wisdom, is peaceableness. Because we can have zeal, and you can have the knowledge, you can have the truth about something, and you can say, no, this is what it is. But if you don't really have a peace and a willingness to yield, and a willingness to consider others' opinions, and just really be patient, there really is not wisdom. You know? Wisdom is going to be peaceable. Wisdom is going to be gentle. And there it is again, right? In the gentleness of wisdom, as we read, when a brother's in trespass, in the gentleness of wisdom, we need to go to that brother with gentleness. That's the number three characteristic of wisdom. First pure, then peaceful, then gentle. I'm like, these are some good fruits. We always talk about love, joy, peace, patience. But gentleness, right? Like this gentleness, this is a special thing here. I need to grasp this gentleness, right? It's precious. That's a good fruit. People are going to see that. And it says reasonable or willing to yield, right? Sometimes that's hard when you see a brother, it seems like he's not got it quite straight. Maybe you got a better idea, but am I willing to yield? Am I willing to consider it rather than cut him off right away? You know, like he's totally wrong, just cut him off. No, I'm like, well, I might hurt a brother. I should just hear him out, whatever. You know, be willing to yield, hear it, and okay, if he's wrong, don't hold against him. Be full of mercy, right? Be full of mercy. Be full of good fruits, unwavering. And some say not showing partiality, right? Because that's not really love. If we're not, you know, looking at all brothers and sisters in the same light, showing the same consideration for everyone. You know, this is wisdom. That is true wisdom, right? Because we ask for wisdom. I ask for wisdom. We all want wisdom, right? Because God's desire is for us to have His wisdom. Well, if we want wisdom, we have to look at all these characters and say, Lord, I need these things, right? I need peace in my heart, peaceableness. I need a gentleness. I need a willing to yield. I need this impartiality. And I need, this would say, without hypocrisy. And so I have to look to myself, lest I be tempted. If I have hypocrisy in my heart, I'm wanting to make a judgment on a brother who's, let's say, sin in my eyes seems so big, right? But I've got this smaller area where, you know, I'm not letting the Lord deal with me maybe in the same way, but I show a higher standard on that brother or sister. Well, that's hypocrisy, right? It's hypocrisy. I should show the same measure. I should look to myself, right? Because the measure I use, it will be measured to me. If I use a greater measure on someone, I got some hidden thing, for certain the Lord will come upon you. I see this often. I might give counsel, or I might share something with someone, or I might, you know, do a rebuke, and it's like almost the next day, the same test comes upon me. Like, it's happened, like, I think 3 times in the last while. It's like the same test, and it just, it's almost like I'm expecting it, and the Lord just wants to see, okay, if you use that measure, then you have to overcome too, right? You can use the measure, but, you know, make sure you overcome it. And if you're not overcoming it, well, you got to show mercy until you overcome it, so you can share in a righteous way, right? With gentleness, with mercy. Because you can have mercy when you realize, hey, I stumbled, right? I'm weak. And then it says, lastly here, it says, the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. When I read this, it's tough to grasp at first, but I just see one thing. It says that the fruit of righteousness, if we want the fruit of righteousness out of all these things, okay, like we see all this bad fruit in here that manifested with the Galatians and the Corinthians and Paul, and so James says here now, if you want to see righteousness come out of this whole thing, he says one thing, it's got to be sown in peace. And there's that peace again. You got to seek peace among the brothers and the sisters. That seed has got to be sown. It starts with a peaceable seed, and it's going to produce good fruit of righteousness. And it's by those who make peace, right? the peacemakers. This is an important thing. And this is a strong characteristic of what wisdom is all about, really seeking peace. And so in chapter 4, we again see here, what is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? This is the same topic, right? Why are these things breaking out? Galatians, why are you dividing and devouring one another? What is the source? And he says right here, is the source not your pleasures that wage war in your members? That's that selfish ambition, right? Some kind of pleasure, whether it's to be exalted, whatever it is. There was some motive there. And he says, that is really the source. And it hit me, right? When the strife comes, when the bitterness ends up, when the judgment, there's some kind of source, right? Some kind of motive, and it's not from God. And it's a pleasure, right? Or a jealousy, whatever it is. It says there's a lust, and you're not getting it. And that's why we take it out. We end up taking it on the people that are around us, and it happens often. If it doesn't happen in the body, we find sometimes it happens easiest among our family, right? The people we love, because they're the closest ones to us. There's something in our heart we don't have, we can take it out on them, right? But that's not the way it's to be. We need to walk in love. Again, it says you're envious. You see, there's the envy. And you fight and you quarrel. See, that's where the division breaks out. The motive, and it breaks out in strife. It ends bitter. But he says he gives a greater grace, right? And he says, humble yourself. God gives grace to the humble. That's how he ends it. And you know what? When we overcome and we walk in the light, then we won't have to fight the jealousy and the envy and all this stuff amongst the body. But what's going to happen is, I thought of this example in how Daniel, there was a time when he was just overcoming and he was being tested, but he was being faithful. And he was working for the king, Darius, there, and he was doing well. And suddenly all the magistrates and these guys that were working with him, you know, they didn't like this, right? Because he was being exalted. Right? And so what happens? He was getting persecuted. And they said, you know what? This guy, he does everything right. We got to set ambush for him. So they tried to use the law against him. And so they made a decree, and they got the king on it, and they made a decree for 30 days. No bound or praying, except for the king. And of course, Daniel wouldn't do it, right? And what happened was they tried to seal him up, throw him in the den. But God turned around, and he glorified Daniel through it. Because, and so the Lord spoke to me that the law is not made for the righteous. The law is not made for the righteous. You can try and bring someone under that law. You see, his colleagues there, they tried to bring Daniel under bondage. But Daniel was walking in love, and he loved Jesus, and he wanted to do the Lord's will. And even though they tried to persecute him and lock him up in the den, he was not under the law. And when they tried to persecute him, that came right back on those men. Or at least and we see Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they came right back on them. When you're not in the law, you're in grace, and the Spirit of the Lord is on you. Right? The law can't have dominion over you. It's the law that says it's made for the sinner and the ungodly. And so when we're walking in peace, we're walking in joy, he didn't hate those enemies. He didn't hate them. He just faithfully called the name of the Lord, right? And they tried to persecute him. But the law has no power. The law has no power over us when we're walking in love. So it's a motivation to continue to walk in love, so that we have that victory and that Jesus is glorified.